From Buck Studio at Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor, here to talk with you about what's new in healthy living, share some down-to-earth advice, and some great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. If you have a question for Zorba, here's the number to call, 1-800-462-7413. And Zorba, along with our calls, some interesting topics.
Yes, the Environmental Working Group, I'm not sure who they are, out of Washington, D.C., is saying that we are over-fortifying our cereals for our children and for young adults. We're going to talk about that, whether or not it's good data or not data. Mm-hmm. Are there too many vitamins and minerals in the cereal that we are consuming?
And
antidepressants. The FDA put a black box warning on antidepressants a number of years ago, nearly a decade ago, saying that antidepressants shouldn't be used, perhaps, in young people and in children, and did that backfire.
And our recipe?
Quinoa breakfast bowl. Tom, when was the last time you had quinoa?
Never heard of it.
Never heard of it. We'll talk about quinoa. Is it good and is it good for you?
1-800-462-7413. Toll free to the phones now, Zorba, as we welcome a listener in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. How can we help?
I have a question for you. About 30 years ago, my mom was my age now. She was in her 60s, and she would talk about her knees aching, and she assumed she had arthritis. Mm-hmm. So my sister and I and my mom were walking around an outdoor market one time, and we saw a stand that said emu oil, and it talked about sore joints and arthritis, and we talked to the man, and he swore by it. So we bought a bottle for mom, kind of as a joke, and said, here, try this. And she said that she thought it worked. So over the years, we kind of teased her about her emu oil, mm-hmm. and she always replied, I think it worked. So now I'm that age, and mm-hmm. I have a sore knee myself, and I remembered that, so I found it in the drugstore and tried it, and I do think it kind of works for me.
Wow.
Uh-huh. So I'm wondering, even though I just tried it half-heartedly, I don't think it was, you know, my imagination. I think it really does kind of work. So I'm wondering what you think about it.
Well, what does it work on? Do you put it on sores or aches, or how do you use it?
Well, I have a sore knee, especially after I garden. And especially at night, it might hurt when I go to bed. So I rub some emu oil on my knee, front and back of my knee. And it seems like I can stretch it out better, and it doesn't ache so much.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting, first of all. Your mom is not alive anymore?
No, she is. She's
in her 90s. She's in her 90s, so she's doing really well.
It's because of the emu oil.
I was wondering that, too.
That's exactly it. Emu oil is the key to living a long, sweet life. Throw everything else away. Forget the statins. Forget right. diet and exercise. It's emu oil. She has found the Ponce de Leon. Right. He's looking in Florida. All he had to do was find an emu and make some oil, and he would have made a ton of – he would have been a billionaire today. but let's talk about oils in general. First of all, let's talk about irritants and counter-irritants that work. If you look at Bengay as a good example, mm-hmm. which has menthol and some other things in it, it produces a different sensation within the skin that then helps stop the pain sensation that's in the brain. So what happens is you have pain. And immediately through fibers, it goes up to the brain. The brain recognizes pain. And if you have an alternative sensation, often the brain will say, well, wait a second, I'm going to start to pay attention to the sensation of menthol. Now, the alternative sensation in Bengay is not only what goes on the skin, but what goes into your nose, the smell. So smell can actually make a difference in how you, you know, in how you perceive pain. But just rubbing the oil on itself can make a difference. And that's often what happens in a massage. In a massage, it's not mm-hmm. just the pressure that goes on the massage. It may be the oils that the massage therapists actually use. It really makes a difference in pain. I know it. I go to a massage therapist when my back bothers me. When I come out, I feel really good. And so, and it lasts for a while. It doesn't last for a week or a month, but if I've got a bad back, I'll go 2 or 3 weeks in a row and it'll get better. So I think the Emu oil actually works for your mom and may work for you, and it may be in your head. In other words, your head is where you have the sensation of pain in the first place. And so if it works, I would definitely use it because there are great advantages. It's a non-pharmacological treatment from a point of view of taking something. Take a pill, put it in your mouth, and it affects a whole bunch of things. You know, Tylenol can affect your liver. Anti-inflammatories can affect your heart and cause an ulcer. There's no pill that you can take that doesn't have side effects. The Emu oil may have no side effects at all.
Great.
Use the Emu oil to your best effect in your brain, in your joint. It doesn't matter. You're welcome. Keep up the good work.
Thank you.
And say hi to your mom for us.
800-462-7413.
In her 90s and still using this, I would say party on.
1-800-462-7413. Now, Zorba, a listener with us in Medford, Oklahoma. Hi.
Hi. I'm 64 years old, in really good health. And about a month ago, I had some discomfort, just out of the blue, and couldn't figure out what it was. It was upper rib cage, almost like a lot of gas or pressure sensation, and then it went away. And I talked to a couple of friends of mine who are docs out on the West Coast. They said it sounded like gallbladder to them, like I had gallstones. Is there a safe alternative way to pass gallstones short of going under the knife, because I really don't want to have surgery if I don't have to?
So we don't have a diagnosis, first of all. That's
no,
number
we do
one.
Not.
Now,
we have,
you don't need you don't need a gastroenterologist to have the diagnosis at all. What you need is an ultrasound of the gallbladder that will tell with 95% of surety whether you have gallstones. So number one, you want to call your family doc and you want to say, I have pain and discomfort. I would like to have an ultrasound of the gallbladder to see if I have gallstones. Done. One and done. The ultrasound will answer the question 95% of the time. That's number one. Not 100%.
Okay.
Sometimes you need a CAT scan, but ultrasound is actually much more sensitive. Hospitals have it. Doctors, some doctors' offices have it. You don't need the gastroenterologist. In fact, you don't want to go to the gastroenterologist initially at all. And in fact, if you have gallstones, the gastroenterologist isn't going to give you advice. It's a surgeon. But we'll talk about that in a second. Number two, I would recommend you get Prilosec, over-the-counter generic Prilosec, Prilosec, 20 milligrams a day. That doesn't work. You double it to 40 milligrams a day on an empty stomach. Take that for a week or two because you might have acid in your stomach. It might not be gallstones at all. It's the best way to discover it is to try the Prilosec. When people come into my office, first thing I say, if I'm not sure, is try the Prilosec, see if it goes away. Gallstones will tend to be worse after a meal, right upper quadrant, that right upper part, cramping pain, because the body wants to pass them. I mean, that's what it'll feel.
Exactly. That's exactly it. I mean, it's like an hour of agony.
Oh.
And then if I throw up, I'm fine.
Right. Yeah. It may be, it may be acid. It might be gallstones. You can't tell without an ultrasound. Now, here's the problem. There is no way to pass those gallstones. In other words, they're stuck. They're made of cholesterol. There was a drug, with name slips my mind right now, that we used to give for a while to actually dissolve the gallstones. But the problem was, after you stop taking the drug, new gallstones end up forming. Hmm. It's sort of the nature of the diet that we have in America, even if we're eating right. So the chances are, if you've got it and you continue to have it, you will need to have the surgery. And gastroenterologists don't do it. If that's the case, you want a surgeon who does a lot of laparoscopic gallstone surgery. You want to find out who does it, who's the best in your area, who does a lot of them, because if you do it through the scope, you're out and back on the farm in 2 weeks. It's not a long recovery. They do it by the old-fashioned open procedure, which a good laparoscopic surgeon doesn't have to do that but 1 out of 20 times. But if you do it through the laparoscope, you're up and out very quickly. If you do it through the old-fashioned open procedure, you're in the hospital for a week. So the surgeon is who you want. You don't want the gastroenterologist. But the echo will answer your question. Get an echo to check, an ultrasound to check whether or not you got those gallstones. And let us know.
I will do that. And thank you so much for your time. I love your show.
Well, aren't you nice? Thank you so much for the call.
Thank you.
800-462-7413. And Zorba, before our next call, somebody is saying that there are too many vitamins and minerals in cereal, and that could be a danger.
Well, very interesting, very interesting. So it's the Environmental Working Group, a Washington, D.C.-based health research and advocacy organization.
Oh.
So what do you think with a title like that?
Sounds pretty impressive.
It sounds impressive, but the question is, who are they? What do they do? Yeah. Is their science, you know, is their science good or not? You know, where do they get their money from? They say there are too many vitamins in here. The FDA developed the vitamins, you know, how many vitamins should be in cereals back in 1968. It doesn't meet with modern standards. Well, they might be right, and the answer is they might be wrong. I mean, there are government agencies that look at this, and basically, vitamin-fortified cereal, and for that part, vitamin-fortified white bread, wiped out a whole bunch of vitamin deficiencies in this country, vitamin A deficiency, zinc deficiency, a whole bunch of things. They say there's too much zinc, there's too much A, that people are getting over-vitaminized. I don't really believe the data they have. However, what about sugar in cereal?
Yeah.
Are Fruit Loops really a healthy cereal because they have vitamins? I mean, I think that's the bottom line. Now, do you remember a few years ago when the company that made Hostess cupcakes and made Twinkies wanted to vitamin fortify them?
I don't remember that.
They did. They wanted to say, well, look, a lot of people eat Twinkies. A lot of people eat Hostess cupcakes. We want to put vitamins in there, in which case they actually have to ask FDA approval. Mm-hmm. And the FDA, in their wisdom, said no, because they knew that the company would then advertise Twinkies.
Good for you.
Are good for you. They have all these vitamins, 100% of your minimum daily requirements with one Twinkie. That's exactly it. Well, I ask you, what's the difference between Twinkies and Cocoa Puffs?
Probably the Twinkies are worse for you.
Well, the Twinkies are probably worse for you, but the Cocoa Puffs are not really good for you. So I think when we look at this together, I think in some ways the Environmental Working Group that's saying this says the FDA should relook at things. I agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
But if they're going to relabel cereals, what they should really do is relabel cereals saying too much sugar in more than one serving of this cereal.
Yeah.
In other words, let's tell people who buy cereals really what it is. That Cheerios are actually much healthier than Frosted Flakes.
800-462-7413. And Zorba, our next caller is a listener in Grand Island, New York. Hi.
Hello.
How can we help?
Well, I've got a question for you about a possible remedial connection between lemons and seasickness or motion sickness. When I was about 6-7 years old, my father took me on a fishing trip off the South Jersey coast, one of the inland bays.
Mm-hmm.
And it was in a small open cabin boat. Water started getting choppy, and I started getting queasy. My father, he promptly pulled out a lemon from a lunch bag, cut off the end of it, gave it to me, and said, here, suck on this. So I sucked on that. That queasiness went away within the space of it seemed like less than a minute.
Wow.
And I have never been seasick since. I'm now just about 84 years old. And after a long business career of flying all over the country in very turbulent conditions, I have never been motion sick at all or ever been seasick. And I've been through typhoons off the coast of Korea during the Korean War.
Yeah. Sucking on that one lemon has helped you for the rest of your life.
That's right. And I still find it hard to believe, and I can't tell whether it was a lemon juice or whether it was something out of the rind of the lemon or what. But during the Korean War, I was over there off the coast of Korea in the middle of a typhoon, and it was a very rough sea. And there were men around me getting sick as dogs, using barf bags to throw up. I was feeling fine.
Wow.
No problem at all.
You were in the Navy?
Yes.
Yeah. What ship were you? What kind of ship were you on?
Well, I was was on an aircraft carrier. You'd think that'd be pretty stable.
Yeah, I was going to say, you don't get sick on an aircraft carrier. They never even...
Don't you believe it?
Well, I'm not sure what the lemon did. You know, the lemon, if you're seasick or something, may actually, during that initial time, may actually help. And that is, by the way, I've never heard of that. And that is probably a good remedy for people who are seasick, who know they're going to seasick, to take lemon with them, cut it off, and suck on the lemon when they're seasick, because that may actually confuse the brain and get the brain away from the sensation of dizziness, of seasickness that bothers them, and move it into a different part. It's a great idea for treating seasickness.
That's what I wondered.
Yeah, I don't think...
It has that kind of lasting effect.
I don't think it has that lasting effect. There are some people who don't get seasick, and they're blessed with the lack of seasickness. And I'll give you a good example. One of my office colleagues, Adam Balin, office colleague, we've been together for more than 20 years. He was out in Alaska fishing. He likes to do a lot of fishing. And they're in the middle of a storm that they shouldn't be in. Mm-hmm. And there are four other guys, and there are about three or four other guys who are just barfing their heads off because of that. And he's got no sensation at all. They're barfing, and he's continuing to fish on the boat. And he doesn't remember ever being seasick in their life. So some are blessed, like Tom, with not ever getting seasick. And I don't know what it is, but there's something genetic in their brain. And I think that's what you have.
What I was wondering, was genetic or not?
It is genetic. And you and Tom share the no seasickness gene. But the lemon is a very good cure for people who may get seasick. And I'm going to tell people to do that. I like that as a concept. I think it would work.
Yeah, so. My father, he just cut off the end of it, so I couldn't tell whether it was the juice or whether it was something out of the rind or what.
Who knows, but you know something? You have now given a lot of people advice. Thank you so much.
Pretty interesting stuff.
Absolutely.
800-462-7413. Before we take a quick break, Zorba, let's take an email question from Anne in Randolph, New York. She writes, "Dear Dr. Zorba, I love your show and your laugh. The issue of a parent cleaning..."
She loves my laugh.
It's infectious.
It's infectious.
"The issue of a parent cleaning a child's blankie with their saliva was interesting, but I do have a question about it. For parents who are smokers, would their saliva have any nicotine or other chemicals from smoking in it? And if so, how would this affect the child? My mother was a huge believer in dirt. We were traveling in France when I was 8 or 9, and we picked up fresh cherries at a fruit stand. As we ate them, my sister squawked, 'There's a worm in my cherry.' Mother said, more protein, just eat it." Not a squeamish woman.
So what did the sister do? We don't know whether or not the sister ate the piece of fruit.
Also, it's easy for the mother to say,
you eat that worm. That's right. You eat that worm. That's right. Eat it.
And just don't give it to me.
That's right. Just don't give it to me. Well, certainly is protein. I don't think I would eat the worm. And I do believe we ought to wash fruit. I think it makes a difference. Dirt is a completely different issue. We can talk about that sometime, you know, in autoimmune diseases, you know, because that's an issue. But as far as nicotine, certainly if you smoke, you're going to have some tobacco products in your saliva. You might have a little bit of nicotine that you're actually, you know, that you're actually excreting into the saliva. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, it may also have some of the antibodies the mother has. I certainly think it's okay for mothers and babies to be in close contact. It's part of mothering.
Have a healthy living question for Zorba? Post it to our Facebook page or send it along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
Our recipe is coming up next. More of your calls, our medical myth buster, and another interesting topic to talk over right here on Zorba Pastor and Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. We'll be right back. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. That number again, 800-462-7413. But before our next call, recipe time now, Zorba, something called quinoa breakfast bowl.
Right, quinoa. Now, quinoa is interesting. It's as some people think it's a grain, some people think it's a seed. It's really kind of you could consider it to be a whole grain and seed. Cooks up quicker than, for instance, a brown rice. Mm-hmm. So start out with 1 cup of red quinoa rinsed.
1 cup of red quinoa rinsed.
Oh, by the way, I haven't gotten into the important. The quinoa is not spelled K-E-E-N-W-A-H. It's Q-U-I-N-O-A. Mm-hmm. So remember, quinoa is not spelled phonetically.
So if you're looking for it, look under the Q's, not
look
under the K's.
That's right. Okay. Look under the Q's. That's right, not under the K's. But if you pronounce it quinoa, no one's going to know what it means.
Okay.
2 cups of water.
2 cups of water.
Tablespoonful of extra virgin olive oil.
Big tea extra virgin olive oil.
And by the way, you could use canola oil if you want something, or peanut oil would also be good in this. Mm-hmm. 1/4 cup of slivered almonds.
1/4 cup of slivered almonds.
1/2 cup of dried apricots sliced into 1-inch, 1/2-inch pieces.
1/2 cup of dried apricots.
Do you say apricots or apricots?
Apricots,
you think
I
it's
say.
Both ways if we looked in Webster's?
I think it's apricots.
You think it's apricots. Yeah. Then why do people say apricots?
Because they're wrong.
So would I be uneducated if I said apricots versus apricots?
We'll be hearing from some apricot listeners, I'm sure.
Would you think worse of me if I said apricots? Okay.
I would.
2 tablespoonfuls pure maple syrup. No trouble pronouncing it. We know it's maple. It's not maple.
2 big tea, pure maple syrup.
Yeah, now we say pure because we don't want you to use things like log cabin.
So
which
it's
are
the,
like
the maple syrup that makes us good.
It's the maple syrup that makes this good. Yeah. 1/2 teaspoon of finely grated orange zest.
1/2 tea, finely grated orange zest.
You know, I think finely is redundant there, and so is grated. You could just say orange zest.
That means
know
grated,
what you mean.
Doesn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah. Means grated, and it's all finely. Yeah. I mean, I'm getting into this for the grammar police. Otherwise, they're gonna be upset.
Got
with it. 1/2 teaspoon of cinnamon.
1/2 tea cinnamon.
Yeah, fresh cinnamon. Buy little containers of cinnamon, not big ones, because they'll be, when they're fresher, they really taste better. 1/4 cup of fresh ricotta.
1/4 cup fresh ricotta.
Okay, let's make it.
Okay.
In a small saucepan, cover the quinoa with water. Bring it to a boil. Cover and cook over low heat, very important, just like rice, till the water's been absorbed and the quinoa is tender. And that's about 15 minutes. And by the way, you can do this in a rice cooker and then you don't have to pay attention to it. It makes it much easier. Lightly fluff the quinoa with a fork. Cover it again. Then in a medium skillet, heat the olive oil. Add the almonds. Do you say almonds or almonds?
Almonds.
You know, the almond people in California say almonds. They don't pronounce the L.
They do.
No, I don't think they do. I think that's a Midwestern thing. Once again, the grammar police, please chime in and let us know. And cook. I'm giving them a lot of work for this. I want them to pay attention. Okay. Cook over moderate heat, stirring a few times until golden brown. It's about 2 minutes. Then add the apricots, maple syrup, orange zest, and cinnamon. Stir well until heated through. Then add the quinoa to the skillet. Gently fluff it. Stir it. Incorporate it into the almonds, apricots, and the maple syrup that's in there. Very important, folks. The maple syrup is what gives it its taste.
You could probably double the maple syrup.
You could, and you wouldn't be wrong. And let me tell you something. It would taste better. Top each portion of quinoa with a little tablespoon of ricotta. You could, of course, use a yogurt if you want to. And serve it. Feel free to put on bananas and fresh berries. Mm-hmm. It's got about 300 calories in it. It's got a lot of dietary fiber, which, of course, is important for that regular bowel movement that you want every day.
Okay.
If you're a quinoa lover or a quinoa hater or you want this recipe, if Tom gives me the prompt, I'll tell you where to go.
What prompt? Tell.
Tell. That's the prompt. Okay. You can go to Zorba Pastor on Your Health. You can see pictures of Tom, find other recipes. You can email us, or you can find us on Facebook, whichever way it is. We want to know what you think about quinoa and try this recipe.
1-800-462-7413, our toll-free number. And Zorba, back to the phones we go now, welcoming a listener in Rhinelander, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
You bet. How can we help?
Yeah, my question is about using liquid vitamin E on my skin, more directly on my face. And if there's an amount that's unsafe, the vitamin E that I do use is 12,000 UIs in the entire 2-ounce bottle that I use, and it's mixed with soybean and coconut oil.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think vitamin E topically is perfect. I don't think you can overdose on it at all. You know, if we look at vitamin D orally that we take within us, it's different. 400 international units I used to recommend. Unfortunately, all the data, all the scientific work on taking vitamin D orally says it doesn't work. So I toss my E orally. However, when it comes to scar tissue and helping scar tissue, there are a number of people who still believe and think that vitamin E oil is really, really good. There's not been a lot of scientific research on it, but I think vitamin E oil is great. And I still recommend it for people when they want to heal their scar. I'll say take a vitamin E capsule, cut the capsule, put it in on top. But you're getting it out of a bottle. What else is in the bottle? Anything else besides vitamin E?
No, it just says soybean oil and coconut oil and vitamin E.
Okay, so it's got soybean oil. That's what it has. It's got soybean oil, which is fine, coconut oil, which is fine, and vitamin E. I think you should use it. One reason I ask that is sometimes when you get bottles that have other things in it, you can be allergic to the other things that are in the bottle, such as perfumes that may be put on or emollients that may not be mentioned in the bottle. There is only certain things the FDA requires. So if you're putting on vitamin E and you're concerned about that, in other words, other things that are in it, just take a vitamin E capsule, which will have pure vitamin E, and then use it. But it sounds like you're tolerating the oil, so that I think that would be fine. What are you using it for?
I actually started using it because I wanted to find some type of something for my skin. I'm getting older. I'm going to be 39 this year.
Wait a minute. Time out. 39 is older. I have to think about that really hard. 39 is older.
Depends on what direction you're looking at it from.
Well, certainly if you're 5, 39 is older, you know. And I remember saying never trust anyone over 30, but I was 19 and stupid. But no, 39 is pretty young. But anyway, you want to preserve your skin. Is that what you want to do?
Yes, I do.
Okay, do you wear sunscreen?
I do every day.
Yeah, that's the most important thing. Absolutely the most important thing. Sunscreen. If you want to know what your skin looks like without sun, you look where the sun don't shine, as we say. So look in the mirror. Look at the back of your butt. And that's because the back of your butt gets generally the least amount of sun that you ever have in your body. And the back of the butt will be what Tom is shaking his head.
I'm trying to get the image of me standing in front of a mirror and looking at the butt.
I wonder what Monica would say. Yeah, looking at your butt. Well, you need a mirror to look at the back. Yeah. But that's where the sun don't shine. And if you, and by the way, for the grammar police, I am using it.
Oh, yeah, everybody knows. Don't worry about it.
But if you look at the underside of your arm also, if you turn over your arm right now and look at it, the sun doesn't shine as much as the underside is the top. And so the top gets most of your sun and the bottom of your arm gets less of your sun. So sunscreen is very, very important for protecting you from future damage. Continue to use the vitamin E oil. I think it may work.
Thank you so much.
And 39 is young.
Yeah, I know it's very young. I'm sorry. Yeah.
I got it. You want to preserve what you have and nurture it. And that's a great idea.
All right. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thank you. We appreciate the call at 1-800-462-7413.
You know, one thing I did not tell their caller that's very interesting is smoking. Mm-hmm. Smoking has been found to age skin as an independent risk factor for skin wrinkles. Mm-hmm. And we don't quite know why. We know smoking has a number of effects in the body. It affects the lungs, of course. It affects the heart. It affects the blood vessels. It affects the blood vessels in the brain, so you're at an increased risk of stroke. It increases the risk of back pain. People who stop smoking have less back pain. And smoking produces more wrinkles on the skin.
Mm-hmm. Before we get back to the phone, Zorba, see if you can help me out with a personal problem. As you know, I'm prone to dizzy spells.
That's right. You've got a good doctor, right?
He's pretty good. You can save me a trip down to Oregon, Wisconsin by answering my question. My doc has referred me to a physical therapist for my inner ear stuff to deal with the dizziness.
Right.
But on a trip recently to another doc, I had my blood pressure taken. Mm-hmm. You know, they take blood pressure, which is a good thing, kind of all the time whenever you go anywhere. Mm-hmm. My blood pressure was 109/57.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Now, they take the blood pressure. It's always low. They take it and say, good for you. Mm-hmm. Your blood pressure is, well, I'm just wondering whether that low blood pressure has something to do with the blood getting to my brain causing dizzy spells.
Reasonable, very reasonable question. So first of all, you're going to your physical therapist for something called Epley's Maneuver, which is very, very useful for resetting, if you will, the dizziness centers between the inner ear. And we're going to put that, we're going to put a link to Epley's Maneuver on our website, zorbapastor.org. So for people who have dizziness and want to see what this maneuver is, we're going to put the link up there. But let's talk about
let's talk about
blood pressure and low blood pressure. So first, the first question is 109 over 57 is an ideal blood pressure. It's not low, but are you on blood pressure pills, Tom?
Well, no.
Well, if you were on blood pressure pills, then those pills could have caused the dizziness. In other words, there's some blood pressure pills that cause something called orthostatic hypotension. Your blood pressure is fine, but when you get up from a sitting position or from a laying position, all of a sudden your pressure goes down and that causes dizziness. Very common for certain blood pressure pills. Very common as you get older.
Yeah.
That in itself can produce a regulation of blood pressure pills for people. Now, that's not in your case. Okay, it's not in your case.
Right.
But for other people, sometimes if their dizziness may be caused by blood pressure issues, we sometimes will give a medication that actually increases the blood pressure.
I wondered
suddenly.
If there was such a thing. We never hear about it.
Right, so there is a medication, but let me ask a question. Does your dizziness always occur when you go from a lying to a sitting position?
More often than not.
More often than not. Okay. Does it go from a sitting to a standing position?
Yeah, I think sometimes.
Maybe sometimes. Okay, does it happen intermittently without that at all? It just happens throughout the day?
I think there's always some kind of movement.
Okay, so it may be from that. However, the pills that elevate blood pressure have side effects. So if I were to say I'm going to give you a pill, it has side effects, it may elevate your blood pressure. If you had a choice between the pill and going to the physical therapist, what would you do?
Well, I'd do the PT first.
Right, exactly, yeah. Exactly. So the answer for many people turns out to be exercise, physical therapy, and not tinkering with the blood pressure for those not on medications. So ask me how often I've given those medications in the last decade.
My guess is zero.
That's right. I give it about probably 0 to 1 a decade because for most people, they end up adjusting through physical therapy to the dizziness. And in fact, a blood pressure of 109 over 57 rounded up to 110 over 60 turns out to be the ideal blood pressure that predicts longevity.
But now here's something I heard.
Yeah, okay.
On TV, some doc.
TV?
There's some study, not the nurse's study, but some huge study that tested people for a whole lot of, tried to. And one of the things they found was that after a certain age, a little bit of high blood pressure is better than low blood pressure for longevity.
Well, the study that you may be referring to has to do with the new goals for blood pressure pills. For people who are on medication. And that study recently came out. So the JNC 6 or 7, I can't remember, which is the Joint National Committee on Hypertension, came out with new recommendations on the treatment of high blood pressure. And those recommendations turn out to change the treatment for some people who have high blood pressure because we may have been moving it too low in some group. I'm not sure what you heard on TV, but it may be referring to that study. But a natural blood pressure of 110 over 60 means, Tom, you're going to live to be 100.
Okay. I don't know whether that's a good thing.
It is good. It is good as long as you're healthy, as long as you exercise and eat a lot of quinoa. There'll be no problem at all.
1-800-462-7413, our toll-free number. That's 800-462-7413. Before the break, Zorba, let's take an email question now from a listener, Tamara, in Wichita, Kansas. She writes, "Hi, Dr. Zorba. I had an allergy test at an allergist's office, and the doctor found that I have a mild allergy to peanuts and tree nuts. However, I've heard about the positive health effects of eating nuts and think they would be a good source of nutrition for my diet, which is mostly plant-based. I don't feel noticeably worse when I eat nuts. Should I keep eating nuts to benefit my health or stop eating them due to the mild allergy?"
Well, when it comes to allergy testing for foods, it's not very good. I mean, it's not very good. So whether or not you tolerate the food is really what counts. Now, peanuts are a totally different issue. There's some people who are highly allergic to peanuts and they have to stay away. But you know that. I mean, you have peanuts and you swell up and you've got lots of side effects. You may have difficulty breathing. Peanut allergy is a very specific thing. Testing for peanuts is different from having an allergic reaction to peanuts. Uh-huh. In other words, no one, if you get tested for peanuts because they're testing for a bunch of other things, to me, that's really not, that really doesn't have a lot of meaning. If you've had peanuts and you've had side effects from the peanuts and your throat has been tightened and you feel like you've had an allergic reaction, that's really very, very important. Yeah. So I think to me, I wouldn't look at the testing. What I would do is I would look at the reaction to it. If you're fine eating tree nuts and you're fine eating peanuts, then I would throw out the testing because clearly the peanut allergy testing on the test does not correspond to how the person is reacting to the actual food they're eating.
Do you have a question for the good doc? Post it to our Facebook page or send it along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
We have another interesting topic to talk over. That's coming up next. More of your calls, of course, our medical myth buster, too, here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. That toll-free number again, 1-800-462-7413. But before our next call, Zorba, warnings on antidepressants may have backfired, it says here.
Right. May have backfired. Well, a number of years ago, the FDA in 2007 actually put a warning, a black box warning on antidepressants. Now, a black box warning is the highest warning the FDA can give about a drug. Mm-hmm. So put a black box warning on it, doctors pay attention. And by the way, so do lawyers. Mm-hmm. Lawyers pay attention.
Yeah, right.
Believe me, there is Perkoff, the medical malpractice lawyers all know about black box warning. So it was a black box warning concerning antidepressants. And it was a warning to physicians that antidepressants used in children, teenagers, and young adults, pretty much young adults under the age of 25, should be used with caution because they may increase the risk of suicide.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you think doctors started doing?
Not prescribing
Correct.
Antidepressants.
They stopped prescribing it. Now, I don't want to say stop prescribing antidepressants, but antidepressants in that age group greatly diminished. We're talking about greatly diminished. Well, this was an article recently published in the British Medical Journal looking at suicidal ideation and completed suicides, which have been, by the way, on the rise. And the rise in suicide paralleled the drop in antidepressant prescriptions in the young adult, children, and teenager group. And so the question has been whether or not – they look back at insurance records to actually find this data – whether or not the FDA really did a service or a disservice by putting this warning on, and more importantly, how do we move forward from this?
Yeah, and they found that there were some dangers in paying attention to
there's dangers in paying attention to a black box warning. Now, the FDA has come back and said, well, this was a warning that doctors should be aware of this, that doctors shouldn't stop prescribing it. But basically, they put up the biggest red flag you can. And once again, doctors pay attention. Lawyers pay attention.
Yeah, so now as a doctor, how do you know?
Well, I never believed – I looked at the black box warning, and I never believed that I should stop prescribing antidepressants for children and young adults. The issue is really the first 2 to 3 weeks that they're prescribed because that's when they tend to have most of the side effects, which can be an increase in anxiety. So the real issue with young adults in that in prescribing them is prescribing them correctly. You have them fill out a number of questionnaires to see if they're depressed. If you can, make sure they get counseling. Some of them want counseling. Some of them will not. Warning them about the side effects for the first 2 to 3 weeks, there may be an issue. Sometimes giving an additional medication for that if there's a parent involved, involving the parent, and then prescribing the correct one at the correct dose. To me, this is the best medicine. In other words, follow the warning. It's a guideline, but it's not a rule, and that's the way to treat the patients.
1-800-462-7413. To the phones again now, Zorba, with a listener in Carbondale, Illinois. Hi.
Hi, Zorba. How are you today?
Good. How can we help you?
I have been diagnosed with spondylosis, and it's in my neck. I know it's completely down my spine, but I've had really, really bad headaches, and I would like to know how to stop it from going any further. And I also want to know about the Mediterranean diet.
Yeah. What is spondylosis?
Well, spondylosis is where there's a sort of mismatch, if you will. The vertebrae are not exactly one on top of another. And due to some ligamentous changes and other things, there's a little slippage. You know, so if you look on the x-ray, it looks like it's a little slippage, and it can come from arthritis. You can be born with it. A number of people have it. You don't notice it unless you do an x-ray for other things. How long have you had neck pain?
I went to a chiropractor about 5 years ago to get – I mean, I went to him for a long time, and this day he was in a hurry. And he adjusted my neck, but he didn't adjust it quite right. And I told him, and he said, no, no. And ever since then, I have had really bad neck problems.
So you've had neck pain since the adjustment. Let's look at the diagnosis and the pain together. First of all, the spondylosis, it's spondylosis or spondylolisthesis, we call them spondies, may have been there since birth, and it may have developed after that. And it may be the pain is maybe related to that. It might be also muscular and ligamentous. You've noticed pain since you had the chiropractic manipulation for the neck. It could have been from that. Obviously, it happened with that in time. On the whole, I send people to chiropractors all the time, especially for low back pain. I'm always concerned with the neck. It's just higher up, and it concerns me. We've got some good chiropractors in town who do some gentle manipulation, who I use for gentle manipulation. But other chiropractors I wouldn't use for neck stuff. I'm always concerned about that because it's above the spinal cord. So it occurred with time with the manipulation. The real issue is how do you treat it? So one way to treat it, of course, is with anti-inflammatories. One or two Aleve once or twice a day can make a difference. But the real treatment, in my mind, is physical therapy with range of motion activities and sometimes with neck traction. Have you tried that?
Yeah, I'm in physical therapy, and I'm on Flexrol.
Have you done neck traction where they put your head in a little device?
I don't want that because it made my neck hurt real bad.
Okay, so the neck traction, because that's how you find out if it works. For some people it works, for some people it does not. How long have you been in physical therapy?
Since last week. The exercises with the neck bend, you know, to the side, and the retraction and the shoulder squeezes. That made me feel just 100% better. I wasn't tired. I had more energy than I've had in a long time. But I just don't want those headaches.
I understand. Here's my recommendation. Physical therapy really takes hold at about 8 to 12 weeks. So you've only just started physical therapy.
Okay.
So what you want to do is do the physical therapy, which makes you feel better. And this is active stretching of the neck. There's a big difference between passive stretching, which is what happens with chiropractic manipulation or massage, and active stretching. You want to continue with your physical therapy and see what happens about 8 to 12 weeks. Quite often, the headaches will diminish in severity or diminish in number. And then if you get a headache, you know, what you want to do is look at Tylenol, or my go-to headache pill is often Excedrin Migraine. I often use it for headaches that I have. For me, for a headache, it works better than Aleve, better than ibuprofen, and better than Tylenol by itself. But that's what I would do. You've got a very, very good chance you're going to continue to get relief with PT. Don't stop it. Continue with it. Thanks for your call. And keep us let us know what happens, okay?
Okay. I sure will.
Oh,
well,
thanks
a lot.
Oh, by the way, you asked about the Mediterranean diet. We'll put information on that on our website. So if you go to zorbapastor.org, we'll have lots of information on the Mediterranean diet and some of my suggestions. That's zorbapastor.org.
And Zorba, time again now for our medical myth buster. Today's email comes to us from a longtime listener named Richard. His email refers to a caller on a past show who talked about using mustard to help with muscle cramps. He writes, "Hi, Zorba and Tom. Yes, the mustard does work. For years, I ran a biking class, and I carried several mustard packets in my bike bag for my students. 2 years ago, a woman in the class had severe cramping. She reluctantly opened the mustard packet and squeezed the contents under her tongue. The cramps vanished. I'm 77 years old and active and have occasional cramping at night. So I go to the fridge, squirt the mustard from the yellow bottle, and the cramps disappear."
I hope she wipes the mustard off her face when she does that. I can just see it. Well, first of all, this is an old biker remedy. I've heard of bikers using mustard all the time when they end up getting cramps. And you know what? It works. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure why it works. It may be the taste of the mustard or what goes on in the brain. The real thing, I hope, hopefully that biker who took the mustard was able to catch up.
God, I get it. But the yellow bottle, you got to change mustard. Have a myth you'd like Zorba to bust? Send it along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
1-800-462-7413, our toll-free number. And our next caller, Zorba, is in Silverton, Colorado. Hi.
Hi. How are you today?
Fine. How can we help?
Great. I had a question also about cramps. I had run a 100-kilometer race in Utah about 8 years ago, which wouldn't have been so bad, but for some reason, unbeknownst to me, I chose to do it in August. Mm-hmm. It was quite hot.
Wait a second. So you ran a 100-kilometer race in Utah in August, and this was a sign of intelligence?
Right. I'm not calling about mental therapy. It's a physical question, really.
So how can I help you?
I was doing really well, and about mile 40, I felt great. I was hydrated. All the signs were go, and I severely cramped in both legs and had a hard time finishing. I had to lie down for a bit, and they also had an ice bathtub that I got to sit in for a while at one of the aid stations. And in the days following the race, I find myself cramping a lot in my legs. And also, I had a little problem with pain in my foot. And after looking at Dr. Google, I decided that I needed to take calcium for the pain in my foot. And
good
the
old
cramps
Dr.
got
Google.
Worse over Dr. Google, yes. So over the next couple months, the cramps seemed to get worse at night. Mm-hmm. And I was in a health food store one day and talking to the manager and told him what was going on. And he said, "Well, pretty much calcium is your body's tightener and magnesium is your body's loosener." And he said, "You need to be taking magnesium and stopping the calcium." And I did that, and it really helped. And over the past 8 years, I feel like I've kind of been addicted to magnesium. Depending on how much I exercise in any given day, I'm probably taking from 700 to 1,200 milligrams. And I don't know if there's any long-term health repercussions to that, the heart being a muscle.
Uh-huh.
Can it get too relaxed or something? What do you think
about that? Well, first of all, let's look at the cramps that you got in Utah when you did the race. Often that's due to lactic acid. It's often due to dehydration and electrolyte imbalance. It can also be due to overhydration. There was a study a number of years ago that showed that a lot of amateur runners often hydrate too much and actually have low sodium in their bloodstream, and that in itself can actually cause cramps. So in the acute issue, it's lactic acid, dehydration or overhydration for that. Now, the long-term issues, there are a number of runners that say they take calcium or they take magnesium and they feel better and they find they have less cramping. It's really not that one is a tightener and one is a loosener. It's not that calcium tightens things up and magnesium loosens things up. That's kind of like feed a fever, starve a cold, or starve a fever, feed a cold. It really doesn't make any sense at all. But if you feel better on magnesium, you might continue to take it. Now, the easiest way to get it is milk of magnesia. A tablespoon of milk of magnesia at night will be good for your bowels and actually give you quite a lot of magnesium. And a number of people actually take that when they actually want to get magnesium. But taking the pills are okay too. I don't know what the pills are doing, but people run. How often do you run?
Oh, every day.
Every day. So people are run, swear by it. They'll swear by calcium. They'll swear by magnesium. They'll say it works for their legs. There never have been good studies that explain why it works. But I'm a great believer in folk remedies for trainers and people who say, this is what works for me. And folk remedies should not be maligned. You know, we say folk remedy, it's like a poo-pooed. Mm-hmm. But the reality is these are non-pharmacological ways to take care of cramps. So I don't think you're addicted to it. I think your body may need it for what you're doing. And generally, it's not that you're going to get too much magnesium for what you're taking. One or two pills a day, it's not going to bother your body. Your body can easily excrete it.
Great. Thank you very much for your time.
You're welcome. Keep it up and keep on running. But I would think again before I would run in August in Utah.
Before we head out, Zorba, before we run, let's hear from your favorite lingual backseat drivers, the Grammar Police. Christine of Delafield, Wisconsin, felt so strongly about your erroneous utterance, she emailed us twice about it. She writes, Dear Zorba, this morning I heard you again use the word regime when talking about the medications or supplements that someone was taking. The word you want is actually regimen. Regime refers to government rule. Otherwise, she says, you're perfect.
I'm perfect. Okay. Regimen. Regimen by any other name is regimen. I'll try to put that in my brain so that we don't have to change regimes.
Very good. If you'd like to bolster the Grammar Police's exacting regime, send your grievances along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org or post it on Facebook.
See you next week, Zorba.
Stay well, Tom.
If you missed anything during the show or just want to download our show podcast, visit us on the web
at ZorbaPastor.org or Facebook.
And don't forget, you can call us anytime at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's not intended as a medical diagnosis, so please do check with your doc. Our executive producer is Carl Christensen, and our technical director is Brad Kohlberg. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, hoping you'll be with us for the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Copies of today's show are available through the radio store at 800-747-7444, ESCRA program number 0712Z. More information on Zorba, his clinic, and healthy living, including heart-healthy recipes, podcasts, and show archives, is available online at ZorbaPastor.org.
PRI, Public Radio International.